T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Tiger waits. It's interesting that Tiger waits.
Middays on the Score.
This hour is brought to you by Patrick Cadillac. Bernstein and McKnight, they are underway at Augusta, and I don't have the odds in front of me, but I was forced into it because my son's saying, make a pick.
You were forced into it.
Yeah, he was yelling
you
at me. He was yelling at me, and I said, I don't know. And he said, we're not betting anything. Who do you think is going to win? And I said, fine, Tommy Fleetwood.
Okay. Fine, I'll have an opinion if I'm forced to.
Fine, I'll tie myself to a guy.
Bastard son of mine.
And then the moment he hits the first tee and sprays one into a pine straw, and my kid's doing Fortnite dances on me, mm-hmm. it's going to give him an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, no, he'll really enjoy doing that. Rory mm-hmm. McIlroy was 7-1. Dustin Johnson was 10-1. Justin Rose 12. Tiger Woods 14. Who was your guy? It was Lee Westwood, right? That's the guy you were forced to take.
No, Tommy Fleetwood.
Oh yeah, right. Tommy.
Not Lee, what? Don't tie me to Lee Westwood, too.
I just did.
He'll be great through the first 2 days.
20-1, Tommy Fleetwood.
Okay.
20-1. I placed 4 different bets, and I did it for kind of 4 different reasons. I threw a couple of bucks down on Tiger Woods at plus 1,400, 14-1, because I figured I don't expect Tiger to win the thing, but I do. I like the emotional hook of having gotten money on his comeback victory to put on another green jacket and win the damn thing all over again. I'm that guy who roots for Tiger whenever he's close, with all of the problems that comes with and all of the emotions that comes with. I'm there. I'm there for Tiger on Sundays. I don't know if – even if you're like a marginal golf fan.
You've got to root for greatness.
You tune in on Sunday if Tiger's got himself a chance or God forbid, a lead.
And even if you say you don't, the numbers say you do.
Yeah. Oh, God.
We know you do. Oh, whether you say it or not, you do.
Everybody watches. I put a large amount of money relative to my bets. I'm not betting like Danny Parkins or Dan O'Neill bet numbers. I'm just, put a couple of bucks on there. I had a few dollars left in the account from a trip to Vegas. So I threw some money on Justin Thomas to win.
Okay.
And I did two. I thought it'd be good for the show if I did two like sabermetrics bets. So that's how I ended up with a couple of dollars on Justin Thomas, whose peripherals maybe seem a little bit down at the overall, kind of rate of play sort of thing. The fairways found and the drive numbers are good.
You went granular.
I tried as best.
Nice.
I can't pretend to come anywhere close. Like Joe Ostrowski knows the actual numbers on golf. I dabble. I've not gotten into the advanced metrics on golf. I just know that keeping it on the green is a good idea and maybe putt less. Don't putt as much as I putt, 4 or 5 times on
every
green.
Stroke counts.
That's
amazing.
Not what you're supposed to do.
Right.
So I went up with Justin Thomas and then Xander Schauffele at plus 4,000 because isn't he
a top 10 golfer in the world?
I believe he is. He's a top 5 drive distance guy, I think. And after talking with David Dusek yesterday, it kind of felt like those long hitters could make play out of the conditions that they expect to see over the weekend. And honest to God, I thought it would be kind of fun to bet Xander Schauffele because I thought a weird name would scare other people off from voting.
Fun to say.
Or from betting on it.
It's fun to say it's Xander Schauffele.
I need Xander to win something for me. And then I put 15 bucks on Jon Rahm because...
That's who my son took.
The man's going to win.
I know.
A major championship at some point.
Yep. And my kid said, Jon Rahm's going to win this. Who do you think is going to win this? I'm like, I don't know. Find Tommy Fleetwood.
He just collapses like a bunch of broccoli sometimes.
Yeah.
Kind of folds right over. It's like watching Ricky Fowler.
Collapses like a bunch of broccoli.
It's a young Frankenstein reference, if you're
collapses
not...
Collapses like a bunch... When does he say that?
In the scene where he's got... what's the Mr... He's doing the testing on the old man at
the very beginning.
Yeah, the very beginning. Yes, yeah. You would collapse like a bunch of broccoli, and then he stabs himself in the leg with the scalpel. Class.
My grandfather's dismissed. Work was doo-doo!
Yeah. God, that movie's fantastic.
Dismissed. Yes. I thought it was going to be in the scene where he's, Victor, you have hardly touched your food. There. Now I've touched it.
Kipper?
Yeah. That was my old bit, stealing my comedy bits. Hey, Theo Epstein's going to be on these airwaves at 2 o'clock today.
That's right.
A lot going on today, because isn't John Paxson also holding his end-of-year press conference today? Also at 2?
It is
Wow. Wow, we've got powerful sports people speaking at 2 o'clock
today. So we're going to carry the press conference while having the interview with Theo on the air at the same time.
At the same time. So we'll just, Theo will be eavesdropping in on PAX and just sort of listening in and everything.
It'd be like you and Terry just dropping in your comments on pressers. Just have Theo do that.
Yeah, I feel like.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, this guy.
I sure as hell wouldn't say that.
I don't know why he's so defensive. Why, what's this guy so unhappy about? Well, you can hear him.
Doesn't he remember Marcus Teague?
That would be awesome to get just like an off-the-record thing of hearing his commentary on Paxson's commentary. That would be fun. So 2 o'clock today. So in truth, Theo will be on live.
Yes.
And then we'll turn around. Because of the new wide orbit system, we don't have to wait to load in all this. So almost immediately after, bang, you can go right into not only reacting to what Theo Epstein's had to say in these airwaves, but then hearing from John Paxson.
Yes, we have the latest radio systems from 2012.
We finally have updated the radio systems from 1994.
You're not exaggerating. That was literally the first year of the copyright on our old software.
What was?
1994.
I was trying to exaggerate. Seriously?
That's legitimately how old the vault is.
I'm pretty sure the first time around when I was here, people were running DOS. I think they were just like typing in commands to run audio.
Wow. 94. So yeah, the new system allows us to flip that over fairly quickly. So we will be doing that. But the Bulls season has ended with a whimper, and it's amazing. They lost in the season in which you lost 60 games. You only have a 12.5% chance at a transformational player. That is
in a draft in which the general consensus is that there are two transformational players. Now, that may not be true. I mean, every draft has a couple of guys pop out of nowhere, or like the 14th or 15th pick. Not the 11th, though. Not the 11th. That's Doug McDermott. But there are a couple of players that fit in. Still, though, two guys that you want a shot at. Tankathon.com was down earlier this morning when I tried to load it.
Overloaded?
It had a 404 user error. Yeah, so I was a little worried about things. It's up. It's back up now, and I've simmed it a couple of times, and the Bulls come out where they always come out, something around the fourth or fifth pick in the draft. Although I did just click it again, and I've got the first pick, so there you go.
We have an angry texter. You nerds make golf boring. Why are you picking someone in golf?
Pretty sure the golfers.
WTF is wrong with you?
Why are you picking someone in golf?
Because yeah, you guys make golf boring.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, because it's fun and there's odds that you can get on the biggest golf tournament of the year.
I was listening to Joe's show last night. Apparently, golf is the, I don't know if it's the biggest trend in terms of online sports betting with it all becoming more legalized and everything, but it might have
huge.
The biggest change over time. It's gotten gigantic sums of money thrown into betting.
Huge. And Masters coverage on the Score is brought to you by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th. Through August 18th, 2019.
Wonder, while Theo's on with Mac and Parkins today at 2 o'clock, I wonder if a determination is going to be made on exactly how many times you can get through the rotation, you know, skipping a John Lester start, exactly who's going to be thrown in there or not. Apparently, Tyler Chatwood's going to get the start on Sunday, which I know makes everybody a little irpy. But I think you can think of it this way. That's a bullpen day. Tyler Chatwood's been in the bullpen for a while. Even if he's good for a couple of innings, you don't expect him to go much more than probably 70-something pitches, just like Yu Darvish had gone the other night, and that'll be your day. I mean, it's just got to be on the bullpen to get the rest of the way through, and that's something that hasn't happened a lot this season. You watch Joe's decision to pull Yu Darvish last night. And you go to Kyle Ryan to get a ground ball, maybe get out of the inning. He's your ground ball seeking guy. It's Josh Bell, who is, by the way,
yes.
Josh Bell has got to be one of the worst worst defensive first baseman I have seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, he's bad.
Oh my God.
His feet are wrong.
It's like wrong.
He's stretching with the wrong foot.
I mean, I get that he was an outfielder, I think by name only, that was converted because the Pirates had some outfielders, and he's a good hitter. Nice little prospect, to be sure. But my God, does he have work to do at first base. On opening day at Wrigley, the Cubs have a man on first. I forget who was hitting in front of Javi Baez, but Baez singles and takes the big turn as you get runners at first and third. And Josh Bell is step for step with Javi Baez as he's going to second base. No one's covering first because you're first and third, so the pitcher's headed that way in case the throw goes over. So Baez just kind of walks back to first base with no threat of anyone getting him out over there because there's no one to throw to.
How did you end up at the park last night? Was that one of those where tickets were available? And you just...
Yeah, Adam had a couple of tickets from a friend. He wanted to, so we went for a couple of innings. The wind was absolutely brutal. And as much as Jason Hayward's hot start with the bat has been impressive, the ball he took down in right field, where he has to readjust on it three
the one deep in the well?
Deep yeah. in the well. Three different times he's got to adjust on that ball. That is a magnificent catch. That is so impossible to do.
Because his eyes come off the ball.
Three different times.
He has to run to a spot. And that is how you do it.
Yeah.
You get your read, you run to a spot, you check. But it was hit so high, mm-hmm. and the ball was, it's almost like it was ballooning last night. Like the one that...
The Starling Marte homer looked like it stopped. Like it went up in the air. It looked like it was going to leave the planet. And then it stopped, and then just fell straight down into the bleachers.
Well, it's the ball, because... What Greg Maddux used to do, and exactly that night, with exactly that direction and velocity of wind, he would allow you to just hit it up into that cold blanket, and it would fall down. But you can't do that anymore because of the lack of wind resistance on the ball.
Well, it did look like Yu Darvish wanted to throw to the wind a little bit early on. I went back and watched, you know, the actual video of it, so I get a better sense of what he was throwing. But he went fastball early. That's what he gave up the homer to Francisco Cervelli on. It's what he gave the homer up on to Starling Marte. It was a 94-mile-an-hour heater right around the thigh. And that went out. And I wonder if that scared him a little bit, because on a night like that, you can just kind of throw it in there and let the wind work it back into your outfield. Decent enough defense, you're going to get some outs. That didn't happen for him. And as it got late, and as those dribblers kind of got through, and as the infield got packed with a couple of Pirate base runners, now you're trying to get some swing and miss stuff. You're 2-2 and throwing sliders and curveballs, and kind of the pitch selection there got a little bit off track, it seemed, from where he'd started out. So I think if Joe's watching Yu Darvish and watching that, you know, kind of a little bit of shake here, a little bit of shake there, and the game plan changes a little bit, it alters some, and you feel like you've got a ground ball guy in that bullpen and Kyle Ryan to come out there and get it out, didn't end up working out. But I can understand the decision. I maintain that they've got to manage the Yu Darvish they have, not the one they wanted to pay $126 million to. That's the way you've got to do this.
This segment is brought to you by International Champions Cup. Get ready for soccer's first tournament of the year on July 16th. Catch the International Champions Cup as AS Roma battles Chivas de Guadalajara right in their own backyard at SeatGeek Stadium. Get tickets at SeatGeek.com today. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I have a Florida women story that stacks right up there with a Florida man story.
I've got one of those too.
I also have something you probably should know about U.S. military history. A notable passing brings us back to something important, and I think we can finally figure out a way to save the planet by eating meat.
Why? I thought we were killing the planet by eating so much meat.
We are.
With the cow farts.
We are, but we can make it better. We're just doing it wrong.
We're going to save the planet in the Midday Midway. That's next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One,
2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
It's actually been a very busy first hour and 20 minutes of this Bernstein and McKnight show. A lot of baseball talk, talking about Yu Darvish's performance last night and where we stand with the Darvish experience. Also talking a little bit about our Masters picks, looking at some Cubs and Sox hitting streaks, etc. So we've bounced around to some different things as we've also acknowledged the end of a Bulls season that has resulted in them pretty
That's
much...
That's really all we've done. We've acknowledged that it ended.
It has. We've recognized that the Bulls season was a thing that is now a thing that has happened.
We will let Mark Schanowski do the second half of that sentence a little bit later on in the show. He's going to join us at 11:20, but you and I have just acknowledged that it ended. Found this story pretty interesting. Think you might too, considering it's changing what we thought we knew about the human species. Scientists are reporting the discovery of a previously unknown species of ancient human that lived in the Philippines over 50,000 years ago. Evidence suggests the new species, named Homo luzonensis, was exceptionally tiny and possibly even smaller than the famous hobbit species uncovered on the island of Flores in 2004.
Wow.
The story of human evolution just got a hell of a lot messier owing to the discovery of the previously unknown species. Bits of teeth and bone pulled from Kayao Cave on the Philippine island of Luzon point to the existence of a distinctly different human species, one deserving of the Homo designation in terms of its genus. At the same time, the fossils found in the cave exhibit features unlike anything ever seen before.
Was this concurrent with Homo sapiens sapiens, though?
50,000 years ago. No, the it begins dated found a foot dated 67,000 years ago. And apparently, as an important aside, they've learned that a group of hominins.
Oh.
Closely related to chimpanzees and bonobos were living in the Philippines as long as 700,000 years ago. So they believe they could have evolved from, I guess, that species.
Well, because I'd like to know, because when I was taking anthropology, it was just Homo habilis. After the Australopithecines, it got to Homo habilis, which was the first to use tools. Then Homo erectus, as the angle of the foramen magnum changed and we began to be more bipedal. And then it was into Homo sapiens sapiens, because they realized that Homo sapiens neanderthalis was, in fact, they sort of had misidentified. I'd love to know where on the overlay this particular species is.
Not
I understood five words of that.
Not sure, but they think they stood around 3.5 feet tall.
And did they stand?
They stood.
Okay, fully bipedal.
Yeah, they stood 3.5 feet tall. Yeah. I think they're standing.
That's really cool.
It is super cool.
Wow. So's this, that we've heard all these horror stories and meat eaters have been demonized because we're ruining the planet because of the methane gas and everything else. And
cow farts.
A lot of it is the waste. A lot of it is what we're not eating when animals are slaughtered. So we can slash polluting emissions by swapping the steaks for more organ meats. You've heard of nose-to-tail eating. According to CNN, meat lovers can help slash these emissions by adopting a nose-to-tail diet that aims to use every part of the animal. It's a study published in the Environmental Science and Technology Journal, swapping ribs and pork chops for organs and offal and trotters could lead to a drastic reduction in emissions. The study on Germany's meat supply chain found while reducing total meat consumption could see emissions fall by 32%, eating more organ meats instead of popular cuts could lead to significant reduction. So they give a bunch of examples here, and they have a guy named Trevor Gulliver, a chef who co-founded the first nose-to-tail restaurant in London, talking about how we waste horrendous amounts of food. And he's got his favorites here. Roasted bone marrow and parsley salad, which uses veal shin bones. As far as I know, that's ossobuco. That's the marrow from inside the ossobuco. That's the veal shank, right? So that's roasted bone marrow, which is fabulous. Deviled kidneys, which are lamb kidneys cooked in Worcestershire sauce and served on toast.
Okay.
In rolled pig's spleen with sage and bacon. In a tureen, using whatever parts are...
What's a tureen?
Tureen is it's almost like a gelatinized combination of layered. It's almost like a pate. It'd be cut into a terrine, usually rolled together and sliced cold.
See, you know what the problem with organ meats is? I mean, like, some people like them, some people don't. But there's no... You got to win over those that are in the middle if you want to do something like this. And you just got to fix the presentation.
Yeah,
you got to stop making it look like there are organ meats on my plate.
No, that's part of the fun of it. And then
it's not.
There's
for
also
a lot of
there's
people,
a,
it's not.
There's a dish here that I cannot say. It's obviously a British name, but it is a dish featuring the plucks of young male goats. And pluck is lungs, liver, and heart of a young male goat. And I can't even, I can just show you the name of this dish.
Okay. Oh yeah, you can't.
It sounds like
no. You can't.
Either the name
that
of it
word
is,
means something very different over there than it means here.
It's either
can't say that here.
It's an aspiring rapper or boxer, or 1920s boxer or current. Or the first word is kid, and the second is a 2-syllable word that the English sometimes use to mean a cigarette.
Yes, and it does not mean that here.
Correct. So we're not going to say it.
Not be said. So check me if I've done this story before, but I'm going to read this because I think that's the point, is that we've heard something like this before. There is a prequel coming out that no one needs.
Is this a DC comic?
It is not a DC comic.
Okay.
They're doing a sequel. Sorry, a prequel. They're doing a prequel to Grease.
Ugh.
It's going to take off from the point of Summer Nights, you know, that song where Olivia and John Travolta go back and forth and they have different accounts of their little summer romance and whatnot. Here's the screenwriter for this movie is the guy who did the screen treatment for Aladdin. Not the first Aladdin, the animated one, but the remake of Aladdin. So the guy's well-versed in remakes, apparently, or prequels or other things. Where are we as a community of moviegoers and movie watchers and movie consumers?
Nothing can die anymore.
I don't understand.
No movie can die anymore.
Who needs this story? Who's watching Grease and is like, man, you know what I got to know is what Olivia Newton-John
Danny Zuko
were
Sandy,
up to. Yeah, what the hell were they up to?
Danny and Sandy.
On the beach for, like, what? Who? Why?
Getting friendlied out in the sand.
Why are we doing this? Oh, here's why. It's because Grease has made close to $400 million at the global box office. That's okay.
Oh, well, there's your answer. You ever heard of the Doolittle Raiders?
Band?
Not a band.
I feel like they could be a folk band.
You never heard the phrase the Doolittle Raiders?
No, okay. No, but they'd be like a folk band where, like, are they brothers and sisters or are they not? And that's part of the whole bit of the band.
New Christie Minstrels kind of thing. No, the 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, does that do anything for you? It was a book and a movie telling a true story.
No.
Okay. Jimmy Doolittle was the leader of the Doolittle Raiders, and I only know about this because as a kid, I read the book 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. Famous, famous movie starring Spencer Tracy as Jimmy Doolittle.
Are those the bomber pilots that helped construct the off-the-aircraft launch of bombers so that they could actually drop high-ordnance stuff over Japan late in the war?
I'm impressed. It was
I forgot those were the Doolittle.
The Doolittle Raid was the United States' first counterattack on the Japanese mainland after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
At an incredibly low point for U.S. morale, they modified these B-25Bs.
B-25.
And they launched from the aircraft carrier Hornet about 650 knots east of Japan to strike Tokyo. Now, it only caused minor damage, but it was an immense morale boost. It was the first return strike. And the story is amazing because they had to launch early. They were seen by a Japanese picket boat. It was supposed to be a sneak attack. So their position was radioed in. So they said, we have to launch now and early. And they didn't have enough fuel. They were able to drop their bombs. They crashed in China. They had to eject. They eventually made it back with the help of the Chinese, who were allies at the time.
No kidding.
They had a vested interest in fighting back against
Japanese help coming back.
Hegemon. It's an amazing story. And just last week, the last surviving Doolittle Raider died.
No kidding.
Dick Cole passed away at 103.
Wow.
He was Jimmy Doolittle's co-pilot in the number one bomber during the 1942 raid. He's passed away at 103. If you don't know the story of the Doolittle Raiders and 30 seconds over Tokyo, it's amazing what they did, what they pioneered. It's not like today where it's like, oh yeah, aircraft carrier guys. They sort of invented the idea of the aircraft.
They did. My grandfather flew drop missions over the other side of Berlin after the war. And I think, if I remember right, I remember him telling me that like the engineering innovation that happened to get these bombers off the aircraft carriers. They had to shorten wingspans. They had to change how they were like folding the planes up. They were like, I think they were sawing wings off of them that they could ship them out in the first place and then putting them back on.
And they only had a brief period of time to practice short takeoffs on land.
Yeah.
They sent them out there. They said, look, this is all you've got. You've got to be wheels up in the air by this distance, which they didn't think was possible. And they trained they had a few
because
practice
all the
runs.
Weight that the things had to carry, they carry and bombs out there. That's incredible. A Florida man story is always good company here on the Midday Midway. A man yelling obscenities, calling himself a saint, and threatening to send his turtle army to destroy everyone has been arrested, according to an affidavit from the India Atlantic Police Department. Officers responded to at least 7 calls about disturbances at a Starbucks coffee and Sassy Granny's Smoothies along Miramar Avenue. That's a hot place. Thomas Devaney Lane, 61 years old, went with a police officer to the department where he yelled at the dispatcher in the lobby while pounding on the walls and on the glass. Lane then left the department, was later located at 7-Eleven on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. As an officer stood by, Lane called 911 and told the operator, "I need to leave now or you will all be sorry. You blanked with the saint." Police said Lane refused to leave his car, so an officer forcibly removed him and placed him under arrest. No word on the whereabouts of his turtle army.
He's got nothing on these Florida women. Pasco County, Florida. Troopers say 3 women in the nude became combative when they were confronted at a rest stop. One of the ladies is accused of trying to hit a trooper with her car. Another allegedly tried to swing at a trooper with a metal bat.
Oh, it was on.
Around 11:15 a.m. Wednesday, Florida Highway Patrol troopers were dispatched for a call about 3 naked women at a rest stop on northbound I-75. There's 3 women standing in the nude putting on suntan lotion, one of the troopers is heard saying. The women, identified as Oasis McLeod, 18, Janiah McLeod, 19, and Cecilia Young, 19, told the trooper they were air-drying after showering. And as the trooper was trying to get information, the women got into a white 2009 Nissan Sentra and drove southbound into the northbound rest area entrance. The trooper pursued, but canceled the chase because it didn't fit criteria. A driver called in to report a reckless vehicle, and another trooper responded, deployed Star Chase projectiles on the vehicle, allowing troopers to back off and establish a perimeter. They tracked the vehicle to a convenience store parking lot. They found the vehicle empty. A trooper tried to arrest one of the women while she left the store, while another woman drove directly at the trooper. Another woman got out of the car with a metal bat and tried to hit the trooper. Another responding trooper rammed the suspect's vehicle with a marked patrol car. Dade City Police responded, deployed stop sticks to deflate the vehicle's tires. They pulled a pit maneuver, a PIT maneuver, to get it to stop. That's like a stop and squat, right? Kay. That's where you get in front, I think so. The women interlocked arms to keep from being arrested after officers busted out windows of the vehicle. The women were tasered before being taken into custody and sent to the Pasco County Jail.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yep. Facing charges of fleeing to elude, resisting arrest, aggravated assault, and lewd behavior.
Oh, thank God they had tasers.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves have clinched their 3rd straight Central Division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday for the final regular season game. Saturday is First Responder Night, presented by Turtle Wax. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Ian Rappaport comes up next with the latest from the NFL on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station, Ian Rappaport.
Here's what we know right now.
Insider for the NFL Network.
Get out your notebook. There's more.
Breaking news across the National Football League.
This is something that has been going on through the wee hours of last night, really round-the-clock discussions.
The Rap Sheet and Friends podcast.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Ian Rappaport with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Ian Rappaport's on Twitter at Rap Sheet. He of NFL.com. NFL.com and NFL Network, the Rap Sheet and Friends podcast, and he joins us now on the Al Pamati Ford Hotline. Al Pamati Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Ian, everybody is still talking about the reverberations of the Aaron Rodgers, Mike McCarthy story that Tyler Dunn wrote for Bleacher Report. Now it sounds like they're all going to kind of move on without backing off of any positions here. Aaron Rodgers knows he said it, and I guess it's knows it can't be unsaid.
You know, there's a lot of interesting parts of it. I was kind of curious yesterday. You know, and Rodgers has talked a lot. He talked on the radio locally with some of his guys there, and then talked to reporters in general yesterday. And, you know, one of the questions that kind of got me was, to Rodgers, obviously, you know, do you take any blame in how the relationships have kind of fallen apart? And his answer was basically like, I don't understand the question, which was, I mean, I would imagine he actually does understand the question. So then it's really just, you know, Rodgers essentially saying that those issues in relationships in the past, whether it's with Greg Jennings or J. Mike or any of the teammates in the past, you know, basically saying that those don't exist, whereas clearly something exists. And, you know, I'm not. I have long sworn off the fairy tale, right? So I am certainly not one of those people that believes that all athletes are heroes and all quarterbacks are, you know, tutoring their backup so they can one day take their place. And, you know, every football player is nice to every fan. I've seen a lot of things that would support that, and I've seen a lot of things that would say the myths are just that. So basically, for me, it kind of comes down to, like, Rodgers can be a little bit of a jerk. I don't really care. He's a very good football player. But as it relates to his football team, things clearly went sideways. And it's been interesting how he hasn't acknowledged that part of it.
So as to his football team, have you heard anything from the Packers or people who understand how the organization wants to work about whether they feel the organization needs some rebuilding or some morale boost or anything like this? Or do they just figure Aaron Rodgers can deal with this on his own?
Well, the attack from the Packers has essentially been like, we've moved on. Like, we have a new coach. We have a new, you know, a lot of new coaching staff. Obviously Ted Thompson, who received a lot of the criticism and, you know, kept on as Packers GM while his health was really failing, which, you know, I don't know how you blame someone for that, but and obviously that was a difficult situation for them to go through. It ended up with him eventually stepping down and being replaced by Brian Gutekunst, but obviously that was difficult. But they've moved on from that part of it. Mark Murphy, the, you know, CEO, sort of de facto owner, has taken much more of a hands-on role. I think that part probably will help. But, you know, it was noteworthy for me that had this been a different/regular organization with a much more visible and powerful owner, I can't imagine some of these issues would have taken place. I mean, you know, doesn't the owner step in if the coach and quarterback are not working well together? Like, that would be an owner thing, and it didn't happen in Green Bay, partially because of the way they're structured.
What are you hearing about the beginning of the Vic Fangio era in Denver? I like checking in on a guy who we really enjoyed his time here in Chicago and just how the unvarnished truths that he would tell and how uncoachy he was. But in a lot of ways, he's talking about being old school and about going back however the collective bargaining agreement will allow him to do it. And I don't think it really will. But how is that starting out? And is John Elway to this point staying out of the way?
You know, Elway has been obviously involved in personnel and picking players and, you know, very, very heavy-handed in that, as is his job. I have not heard of Elway kind of butting in as far as, I hate to say butting in because he's the boss, but, you know, getting involved in how the practices are run. But, you know, he will. He is involved in everything. And, you know, like it or not, that's the way the Broncos have been run. It was that way when they were winning. It's been that way when they were not winning. It sounds like things are going well with Fangio, as well as can be expected. You know, they haven't talked football much except for, you know, basically this week. But player, you know, you guys know, like, players like him. He seems to be more open-minded than maybe I realized. I mean, there'll be some old school things, but the way he has, you know, like, I think they're going to run a very interesting offense.
Interesting how?
And just, you know, much more of the Kyle Shanahan McVay school rather than the, you know, sort of hand it off twice and then throw on third and medium. You know, like
that's the John Fox.
Right. Kubiak. Yeah.
It's right. It's not going to be John Fox. I think it's going to be much more. You know, I just say this because I spoke to Fangio for a while when we were in Arizona for the owners meeting, and he talked a lot about trying to create an offense that he found difficult to face. So I'll be curious to see what that actually looks like, but I think the reviews are pretty positive.
Talking over the NFL with Ian Rappaport. You find him on Twitter at Rapsheet, the NFL Network, and NFL.com. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Ian, I kind of see the issues that are the PR issues that the Packers are going through and the Steelers are going through, and they're kind of the same types of symptoms, but obviously the issues at hand are much different. Why is it that Steelers like Ramon Foster and Marquise Pouncey are on social media trying to diffuse some of this stuff between Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster and others, and that you don't have, or at least we haven't seen something similar to that in the Rodgers case? Is it just kind of the nature of the two players at the center of these two stories?
I think it's mainly because Antonio Brown has been so out there on Twitter that, you know, if Antonio Brown was out there on Instagram, I guess, then maybe players would respond. I just think it's, you know, the Aaron Rodgers quotes were in an article, and so Rodgers responded in an interview. The Antonio Brown stuff has been on Twitter, so players responded on Twitter. I just think it's mostly the avenue. But it is, you know, what's strange about these two places in general is they're kind of, you know, I mean, they're kind of like the Bears, where it's like sort of a old, classic, respected franchise that for years has been lauded as a place that has done it the right way. And now both are kind of running in the muck a little bit with, you know, he said, she said, calling names, sort of accusations, and all sorts of things. And it's, I mean, these are the kind of things you rarely associate with these two teams, which is part of the reason why I think they've won. But then all of a sudden they don't win, and this is the response. And I know the avenues have been different, but the actual storylines have been similar. Players angry at the quarterback's too heavy-handed, this player didn't want to play there, this player left and now is taking his anger out on the court. I mean, there's definitely some similarities between two places where they've sort of done it, you know, they've really done it the right way.
Where are we in the investigation of the Tyreek Hill incidents from Kansas City police? We heard about it. It was a big splashy headline. And now lately, nothing. What's going on?
There is a reason for that. So my understanding of where that stands is it is now in the hands of Child Protective Services. So which is, you know, obviously local to Kansas City. And it is it's very specialized. And so basically what they are doing is they are now investigating, trying to figure out what actually happened. And, you know, it involves a 3 or 4 year old, the child of Tyreek Hill, and trying to find out, was there abuse? Was there not? Should he face charges? What does the evidence show? What does the child say? I mean, it is their specialty. So the NFL is essentially saying, you know, not coming out and saying, but what it's happening right now is they're saying, let's let law enforcement do its thing. And then after that, the NFL will weigh in, either do its own investigation, or take what law enforcement, sort of take the lead from law enforcement and see where to go. So that's why we're all waiting, because it's on Child Protective Services to react or come to its conclusion first.
I was reading in the Boston Globe that Robert Kraft's lawyers want to suppress any sort of video from hitting trial because it could cause irreparable harm. And the only words that formed in my head were, who cares? It happened. What's going on with this case? Are we just kind of waiting in lawyer purgatory for the next couple of weeks?
It sounds like it, although we should have something. I believe there's a date coming up before the draft, which I'm sure the Patriots are going to be thrilled when this is in the news, before the draft. I mean, you know, irreparable harm, I don't know about that. I know just as a person, I would prefer not to see it.
Of course.
You know, I mean, there's just some things that I don't need to see. It's not, and that's not a judgment. It's just, I would prefer not to see it. I don't know how that's going to come out. I do know in a lot of cases, you offer the plea deal that he was, you know, that he was offered. And a lot of times the Johns, for lack of a better word, take it just to be done with it. And some people who were caught in the same operation have taken the deal. Kraft has not. So that means it's going to play out in the courts and in the newspapers or online outlets, and we are going to be reading about it until it's, you know, probably quietly settled at some point. But yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, until the lawyers kind of battle it out, that's where it's going
to
be.
Yeah, I think we've defined irreparable harm to those of us viewing it. I mean, really, it has nothing to do with him. It would have to do with us. That's irreparable. Yeah. You can't unsee that. Ugh, no, thank you.
Right. I mean, for me, like, you know, I cover this story as a football reporter as it relates to football. So at some point, if Robert Kraft is suspended or fined, I will definitely report on that and whatever developments. I would just, yeah, I mean, I think I'll just let other people see.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I can't blame you for that.
I'm good there. Ian, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
It's Ian Rappaport. The top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves have clinched their third straight Central Division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday for the final regular season game. Saturday is First Responder Night presented by Turtle Wax. For tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Len Casper was very cold last night, and we'll see if he is thawed out enough that he is able to have a conversation with us at his regular time regarding the Chicago Cubs that he describes on television. He's coming up next. Len Casper on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.